On this week's Big Tech Show, how will the latest developments in artificial intelligence affect your life? Will you get new powerful personal assistants? Are you in danger of something terrible happening? We explain what's going on.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees, they actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, and the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
Welcome to Real Health with me, Carl Henry. Folks, my guest today is on a mission to show the whole nation how easy it is to make a loaf of bread. Cooking that is simple and easy and delicious too. She has a brand new book out called the Ballymaloe Bread Book. And I'm delighted to be joined by chef, TV personality and founder of Ballymaloe Cookery School, Dorina Allen. Dorina, welcome to Real Health. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm delighted to be talking to you.
I'm looking forward to this. I'm slightly nervous, but I'm looking forward to it nonetheless because I'm not the best cook in the world. I don't cook bread whatsoever. So I'm intrigued by this. Anyway, let's get cracking. Where did the idea for a bread book come from? Because you've written 20, this is your 21st book. So where did the idea for this one come from?
Well, I'll tell you what now. The original Ballymaloe bread book was published in 2001. It's still in print after 20 years. But a lot has happened, as you can imagine. A lot has happened in the last 20 years. We've added loads more breads and everything like that to our repertoire. And basically, there were a couple of things that kick-started this revised edition. And one of them was, well, here at the Ballymaloe Cooking School, we started a bread shed in a sort of container in 2016. And we really started making sourdough bread in earnest at that. And that's like a wonderful little teaching kitchen. Lots of magic happens there. But the other couple of things then, another trigger was, of course, during COVID, everybody went on a mad frenzy of trying to make banana bread and sourdough bread. And sourdough is definitely not the one to start on if you've never made bread before. Although it's super simple, really, once you get your head around how easy it is, and it can be fitted into any kind of weekly schedule. But basically, so there was all that frenzy during COVID. And then, do you remember the beast from the east?
I do.
When the whole country shut down because of all the snowstorms and everything. And then, of course, after a couple of days, a lot of things ran out in the supermarkets, fresh food and indeed bread. And there in the aisles of the supermarket, there were people squabbling over the last sliced pan. And I literally saw people sort of like trying to tear, tug one from somebody else. And there, a couple of aisles over, there was, of course, there was flour and bicarbonate soda and buttermilk. And I thought, oh my God, people have totally forgotten how easy it is to make a little loaf of soda bread, the breads of our country, or they never learned in the first place because now everybody's so busy that, you know, with both members of the family working, that I never really remember learning how to make bread. It was just always going on at home. I'm the eldest of 9 children, and my mother loved to cook, and she made brown bread every single day of her life. Even at the end of her life, when she'd had a stroke and one of her arms was a bit paralyzed, she literally would make it with one hand. But when I just remember all of this going on, and I would, when I was almost just barely tall enough to see over the kitchen table, I'd watch her making bread. She'd give me a little lump of the dough, then I'd make it into a little round, and then I'd cut a cross in it, which is the traditional blessing, and then I'd prick it in the four corners to let the fairies out of the bread. And if you didn't let the fairies out of the fairies would jinx your bread, you see. They were always up to mischief. And then I'd put it in on the baking tray into the essay, a bit like an aga cooker, and it would bake alongside hers and then would come out. And of course, it'd be as hard as a rock because I'd have overhandled it, but everybody would say it was delicious. So that's how I learned how to make soda bread, either white soda bread or brown soda bread. And then when I came to Ballymaloe, Myrtle Allen, who later became my mother-in-law, she taught me how to make a loaf of Ballymaloe brown yeast bread. And, you know, like many people, I was very wary of yeast. A lot of people are scared to bits of yeast. They think, oh my God, all that kneading and all that, you know, double rising and everything, and, you know, all that work. But basically, the Ballymaloe brown yeast bread is a brilliant one to get started on because there's no kneading at all involved and only one rising. So, and it's a delicious, super nutritious bread that you can eat for several days as well. Or if it's even if it's quite stale, you can cut into really, really paper thin slices and dry them out in the oven and use that as little croutons to go with cheese. And so anyway, but so the bread from the, then I just thought, well, that's it. After I saw people tugging loaves of sliced pan from each other, I thought, well, something has to be done. And, you know, the soda bread is the one to start on, really, because, you know, the next time you're out of bread, instead of thinking, well, where are my car keys now till I get down to the shops or the whatever, just turn on the oven, grab a bowl, weigh out a pound of flour, a level teaspoon of bicarbonate soda, a level teaspoon of salt, 14 fluid ounces of buttermilk, mix it up in the bowl, and into the hot oven. And if you make it into little scones, if you're in a hurry, they'll be out in 10 minutes. And if you make it into a loaf of bread, it'll take maybe 30 minutes, 35 minutes before it comes out of the oven. And then by that, you wouldn't even have found your car keys and be back in the shops by the time it's out of the thing. So I really need people, a lot of people say to me, look, where will I get time to make bread? You know, or I can't possibly make bread. And if I, you know, if I could only be my legacy, that I have somehow or other got people to realize that any Egypt can make a loaf of bread. You know, if you follow a recipe, turn on the oven, follow that recipe on the brown or white.
I've never seen white soda bread. I've only ever seen kind of the, you know, the brown soda bread.
And actually most of what you see as soda bread nowadays is actually made in a loaf tin, whereas originally it was made in a round and literally with the cross on top of it. And people sometimes would go over to the holy water font by the door and sprinkle it with a bit of holy water before they, and of course that varies out, but before they put it into a pot oven over the open fire, and they would put some of the embers from the turf fire on top of it. Some of you and your listeners may remember seeing this from their grandmother. My great aunt Lil showed me how to make it in Tipperary. And you know, it was an incredibly more skillful way of cooking. Then nowadays, there's no excuse for us because we have ovens with thermostats. But you can actually, a lot of older people say to me, oh, you know, the bastable bread, I loved it and it was so lovely and the crust was so nice and soft. But you can reproduce that practically exactly by putting the dough into like a casserole or a Lacruzzi casserole or something, a hot casserole, put it with the lid on, put it into the oven and it kind of steams inside it. It is wonderful. So you can reproduce, that's what memories are made of, but you're too young to remember any of that. But anyway, you have a go now. You have a go after that.
I love when people come on who are experts in their field and they have a real graw and a real passion for what they do because they make it, everything sound so simple and so easy.
But
and,
it is. I've made a career out of simple. And the reason why my books sell and all the rest of it is two things. One, because so many of my recipes are really simple to do. And also the recipes really work because they have been tested and tested. Because I think as a cookery writer, my first responsibility is to make sure that the recipes in my cookbooks work. Because otherwise, particularly for people who are beginning, you know, they pick up a recipe, they do it, and it doesn't work. And they blame themselves. The people who are starting, they think, oh, I can't cook. But you'd be surprised how many recipes and cookbooks are not properly tested. And it's not fair to people. So I take that responsibility quite strongly. But anyway, there you are.
Do you think that, you know, how, you know, cooking in the last couple of years has become very trendy and very cool and all of that. Do you think that bread has got left behind, that people will cook the other dishes because they perceive it to be a little bit easier or a little bit more accessible maybe? And they've forgotten about even thinking about baking bread.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's possible that, but honestly, now think about it. You can have people around supper or something. You can do all your star turns. But if you actually make a little bit of bread, put a few little scones into the oven, maybe dip them in a cheddar cheese or something, you can add all sorts of things to the, particularly to the white soda bread. You can even use it as a base for pizza. But anyway, your friends coming around, you're doing all your things, you have a little bit of lovely fresh bread coming out of the oven, everybody will remark on the bread. And that's the thing that probably will have taken you the shortest time of anything you do. So it's definitely a block we have somehow or other. And then, I mean, you talk about cooking becoming very popular. My God, when you think about it, the most important thing to be able to do, whatever all the other skills, whether you're an astronaut or whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, or architect, the one thing we have to do is eat every day. And what are we like? And indeed, for that matter, I really think that our government, our Department of Education, our schools are failing on their duty of care to this generation, and indeed the current generation and the next generation, by letting them out of our houses and our schools without the basic skills to feed themselves properly. And hey, look at it, the less more de-skilled we are, we've become incredibly de-skilled, the more dependent we are on other people, and we're playing right into the hands of the multinational food companies, the less we, and the people who produce all that ultra-processed food, which we now know is killing us, there's no doubt about it. And the more less we know, the less skilled we are, the more they better they like it, because we're completely dependent. It's crazy. It's crazy, crazy, crazy.
Bring me back to that recipe earlier on for the soda bread, because it sounded really, really simple, but I want to go back there and bring us through that step by step for people listening in, because it sounded so easy and it sounded delicious. Yeah. So what are the key ingredients people need to have to make it?
First thing, you're out of bread, you're nearly out of bread, you turn on the oven. Okay, the oven must be fully preheated. Then you grab yourself a nice wide bowl that you can mix in. You get your scales and you weigh out a pound or 450 grams of plain white flour.
Okay.
Into that, you put a level teaspoon of bicarbonate of soda, sieve it into it, or rub it between your hands as our grandmothers always did, and then a level teaspoon of salt into the bowl. Run your fingers through that to make sure you mix the bicarbonate of soda and the salt evenly through it. Then make a well in the center and measure out 14 fluid ounces of buttermilk. And if it's low fat buttermilk, take out a couple of tablespoons and add a couple of tablespoons of cream if you have it. Because, people used to use whole lovely rich milk before. Anyway, then so you have your flour and your salt and your bicarbonate soda in the bowl, and make a well in the center, a little space in the center. Pour the buttermilk into it, and then take your... hold the side of the bowl, and if you're right-handed or whichever, reverse it if the other way around, hold the side of the bowl and make your hand into a claw with your fingers outstretched, and then right into the middle of the bowl and stir in a full circular movement from the center to the outside of the bowl, and then the bread is made. Okay, it literally takes about the length of time it does for me to tell you. And then you put a bit of flour over the worktop, turn it out onto the worktop, tidy it around the edges. Actually, it's no harm after you've mixed it to wash your hands and dry them, not because it's just so that it's not sticky. And then you tidy it around the edge, flip it over, and then kind of tuck in the sides so that it comes up into a round. Flatten it a little bit, not too much, but to about an inch and a half with your fingers. Then cut a deep cross in it with a knife. And traditionally, that was looked on as a blessing for the bread. But basically, it also has a very practical reason, because the last place the heat will penetrate is in the center of the bread. And so if you cut across and it'll open out in the center and the heat will penetrate in there, and then you prick it in the four corners to let the fairies out of the bread, as I've mentioned several times before. And then you just lift it up, put it onto a baking tray, slide it straight into the preheated oven. That's very important. And then it'll take about 30, 35 minutes to cook. And if you're not sure when it's cooked, take it out, tap the base, and it should sound sort of slightly hollow on the bottom.
And heating at 180, I presume?
Oh, no, put it in. That, well done for asking about that. So basically, put it in at 230 centigrade, and then after about 15 minutes, turn it down to 200. Well done for asking me that. I should have said it. And then, but otherwise, supposing you wanted to just make scones, you could flatten it out, the dough out a little bit more, and then just cut it into squares or rounds or whatever you like. And actually, I love to maybe brush the top with a little bit of buttermilk or egg wash and dip it into, say, grated cheese if you want to serve them with soup or with supper, something. Or otherwise, if you want marmalade, just leave it out. So it's, even if you're only able to make one bread, to be able to make that white soda bread would be a brilliant thing, because it's so versatile. And then also, if you want brown, of course, you'd use half wholemeal flour and half white, or 3/4 wholemeal and white. There you are. Now there's your tutorial.
I have my homework from the master for when I go home this weekend. One of the things I'm imagining as you're talking through there is, on the steps that you're talking through, is I can see a family making that bread and the children loving the texture of mixing it together with their hand.
Yeah.
And that whole idea of family cooking and teaching children basic skills is really important, isn't it?
So important. Oh my goodness. It's the same thing. I mean, years ago, the skills were passed on from mother to daughter. Didn't even talk about teaching. They just, you helped to do things. And actually, in a way, I think nowadays, when I was a child, there were 9 of us anyway, for a start. We all had our little jobs and we took that completely for granted. So, of course, we all helped with peeling and chopping and helping mommy to do this and that and the other and feeding the hens. The scraps from the cooking went to the hens and came back as eggs a few days later, etc. So we learned all those things. So in a way, oftentimes people say, well, no, nobody helps me now. And then it makes the mother or the person who's cooking in the house so resentful. But I mean, somehow to get them started, maybe even making pancakes or something together and cooking them and the whole, to get a bit of fun into it. And then, you know, the funny thing is if kids are involved in the mm-hmm. cooking,
yep.
or better still as well, the other really important thing is in the spring to buy a few packets of seeds and sow seeds with them. And, you know, it could be anything from radishes to lettuces to carrots to peas, of course, are wonderful as well. And now a lot of kids don't know that peas come out of a pod. I mean, I've had that. I saw in my own students here, I saw somebody going at a pea pod there a couple of months ago with a knife and fork. Oh, my God. I thought I was such a failure.
And, of course, with Christmas coming up, Christmas is a lovely time to do something like that, where get the family around, get the children involved. It's half an hour turnaround in terms of making it. And you can just see that image. Can I ask you something totally random and totally away from bread for a second? Purely because I was watching a program about it last night, when I knew I was going to chat yourself, I wanted to ask you, what's your take on air fryers?
Air fryers. Well, now, I actually don't have one because I have an AGA, you know, and all of that. But some people seem to think they're great. I wonder, you know, are the people who bought them a couple of years ago still using them day in, day out? Or is that another thing that's assigned to the back of the cupboard? But I'll tell you what I do think is a very good idea. And again, I don't have one. I think I do have one, but I don't use it that much. But because I haven't, again, because I have this old Arga stove, which everything can bubble away on. But actually, the slow cookers, I really think, are brilliant, particularly nowadays when I don't know how all the young people, both of them working, several kids, can actually keep all the balls in the air. It's all very fine for me to say, you know, for goodness sake, cook something and put it down the middle of the family table, sit around the table, even if it's only for a couple of nights a week. But really, it's incredibly difficult for people. But the slow cooker means that you can indeed put something on in the morning and it's kind of bubbling and hot and a great big pot of it when you come home from work and so on. So that's a piece of a thing I really think is worth it.
And of course, that's the idea of that one pot kind of meal, isn't it? Which is great for the winter when it's cold. You have a lovely, warm, hearty kind of... My grandmother used to make sausage stew like that. It'd be on for hours and it'd be delicious. By the time you actually got to eat it, it'd be, you know, it's a very wintry kind of togetherness kind of food.
That's lovely, comforting food, basically. But actually, the last book I think I wrote was The Way to Cook. That was literally for people who hadn't had time to learn, or for young people, or for people going to university or something, about a certain number of basic recipes with riffs on them. But the one before that was called One Pot Feeds All. And I absolutely love that, you know, with a big roasting tin in the oven with lots of potatoes and a bit of meat, or it could be bean stew, or it could be whatever, or indeed for that matter, it could be a lovely apple tart or apple crumble, or just one pot, put it down in the middle of the table and everybody tuck into it again. That's what memories are made of. And you see, I was brought up, as I said before, I was the eldest of 9 kids, and my mother loved to cook. We were so lucky, and we had a kitchen garden, and we had hens, and we had blah, blah, all the rest of it, and our own milk. We even had a Kerry cow. But basically, she really used to regularly say how important it was to put the effort into cooking and putting the food on the table, because if you didn't put your effort into the food on the table, you give it to the doctor or the chemist. So I totally, absolutely knew that our food was our medicine, that it was our food should be our medicine, not little bottles of pills and tonics and all that sort of thing. And nothing's changed. If we invest in food, then actually there's plenty of research there to show the less you spend on food, the more you spend on meds. It literally goes like that.
And of course, food doesn't have to be expensive. So you might be spending less on food, but in the same boat, food that you make yourself, that you prep yourself, it's genuinely cheaper than a lot of the prepackaged stuff, or it can be.
Well, it is, and it sadly isn't, because sometimes, sometimes some of the ultra-processed food are actually cheaper. You couldn't do it for it. But hey, you are what you eat. Do you know what I mean? And a lot of that food is neither nourishing nor sustaining. You eat one slice of good bread and you know you've eaten something. You might even think about it, but you feel satisfied. You can eat three or four slices of squishy sliced bread. Nothing happens, basically. So in a way, and also, but you see, here's where being able to cook comes into thing. You can make a silk purse out of a sow's ear if you can actually cook. You can take a bag of potatoes, which cost you a couple of euros, some carrots, something, maybe a bit of streaky bacon, a bit of breast of lamb, which is so much lovely flavor, things that are not expensive, put them together. And as you, like your grandmother did, let them simmer away nice and slowly. And you have something super delicious. You can't do that if you can't cook. And so I often meet now really, really, you know, highly achieving young people, and all younger than me now, of course. But anyway, and God bless us, some of them can't make toast. I had, during the pandemic, I had this woman, she was the CEO of one of the top international companies in Dublin. And she rang me up. She had come down a couple of times before. She rang me up and she was in tears at the end of the phone. She was up because remember, you couldn't go out, you couldn't do anything, no restaurants, etc. And she literally did not know how to start to shop, not to speak of, she could hardly make toast. And here was this woman who could run the country, basically, feeling utterly and totally helpless. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what are we like? And for goodness sake, let all young people hear this. Doesn't matter what else you do, make a little time to learn how to cook, and it doesn't have to be rocket science. If you have 8 or 10 techniques, you can do a million things. I can teach people how to cook a ton of things, even in a day, but in a week, basically. And what I love is when people come into me and they think they can't cook anything, and then I show them how to do a few things, and they say, "Yay, I can cook!" You know, it's like with that one skill. Sorry to go back to bread again, but that one skill. How many different drifts can you do on it? You can make a bowl of soup. You can make an omelette. You can make a scrambled egg. You can make a little stew. You know, I mean, if you have a few eggs, oh my goodness, if you have eggs and potatoes and whatever.
I promise you this, between now and next week for our next episode, I'm going to make that bread with my son at home, because I can imagine him with his hands mixing it all around. He's going to absolutely love it. It's been fantastic catching up with you. Great
Lovely.
Content and great tips as always. And the very best of luck with the book. And it's available in bookstores nationwide at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I just want to say one other thing, because a lot of people now have, of course, a gluten intolerance. Again, it's a reflection of, you know, what we're doing to food to make it cheaper, basically. And it's kind of, it's a terrible impact on our health. But there's a really good gluten-free chapter in this book, which was written, I can say it's really good, because it was actually written by one of my senior teachers, Debbie Shaw, who's a gluten-free herself, and she's a super cook. And so all those yummy, they're yummy, delicious things in that chapter for people who might think they're missing out because they're gluten-free.
Serena Allen, it's been amazing catching up. I've really, really enjoyed that. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. The very best of luck with the book and everything down in Ballymaloe, and we'll catch up very, very soon. Folks, I really hope you enjoyed today's episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry. A fascinating insight into bread making. Make that bread, because I'm going to make it between this week and next, I promise. As ever, you know where we are, at Carl Henry PT on Instagram, realhealth@independent.ie, and we'll see you next week. Have a made that bread. Slán go fóill.